Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show. On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Ever have that, that kind of night where you thought you slept soundly and you wake up and you felt like somebody punched you in the face?
Oh, yeah. That was your night?
Yeah, my pillows are in the wash and I forgot to bring them back upstairs. So I made a terrible mistake. I went with substitute pillows.
How could you?
It's not good.
So I woke up this morning and driving in, it felt like somebody punched me in the face.
Why didn't you go retrieve them? I would have.
I should have.
Yeah. Instead of tossing and turning on them.
Should have called you to drive over from your house and get them.
But you don't look like you were punched in the face.
Well, it's nice of you to say, though. It's not true. Yeah. It's not good. My Pillow's new slogan should be, don't feel like you're punched in the face. Sleep on my pillow. Parts of America need to lighten up this morning. Sean Spicer was funny. I hate to break it to you. I'm no bigger fan than the rest of you are, or majority of you are, but Sean Spicer was funny. Get over it. How about that for a start? And we'll do the top six at six here, and then we'll tell you what else is coming up on the show. Oh, and the Bears.
Holy yeah.
Crap. Wow.
Yikes.
I believe didn't I almost nail that score? I predicted a blowout.
You did predict a blowout.
Yeah, and I think I was pretty close to the number. Dr. Moe's coming up. Ryan Noble's coming up. Hamp coming up. We'll start something new in the 9 o'clock hour. It's a highly thought-out contest. At 6:14, let's do the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
On number one, world leaders gathered in New York this week for the UN General Assembly, and one of President Trump's main deals is going to be to define how his America First approach coexists with the world mission of the organization, because the United Nations is not just America. And it would be hard to argue that the United Nations is not a big bloated problem in so many ways. But it would also be hard to argue that you could solve many of the world's problems without it. So figure that out. Donald Trump will keynote an organizational situation where he'll sit down and try to figure out how to make the UN run better. That's mostly photo op, I believe. And then he'll make one of the speeches that presidents always make at a time like that. That's a weird room because you got, you know, a good portion of the room on translator and a portion of the room not paying any attention at all. And that room always seemed echoey to me, not from an audiophile standpoint, but it just seemed like a big, cold room whenever you see anybody doing a speech there.
You don't get an immediate response from your audience.
You know what they need is cue cards and applause signs.
Mm-hmm.
Do it like the old Tonight Show. Next. Trump went a little tweet nuts yesterday morning, one of which was, I spoke with President Moon of South Korea last night, asked him how Rocket Man is doing. Long gas lines in North Korea. Too bad. I'm not even aware that most North Koreans have cars outside of the cities, do they?
I don't think most of them have lights.
Yeah, you got that picture, that famous picture with the one light bulb? I know they don't have that maple coffee you were talking about last hour at the Pyongyang Dunkin' Donuts.
Pumpkin latte.
I don't think they have any of that.
So I don't know what the long gas lines. This is not the 70s in America. This is more like the 1870s. So anyway, you called him Rocket Man and the world went, well, should you be making fun of him?
Right. Well, he was just referencing the old Elton John song.
Oh, you don't even think he was thinking of Kim Jong-un?
No.
Just he had an Elton John flashback there?
Do we really need a nickname for Kim Jong-un anyway?
No. I mean, Little Kim. Well, Kim seems to work. He's little and his name's Kim. Next. Got a couple of hurricanes in the ocean again. Another one brewing more closely is Maria. Anybody got a problem with Maria? Not the hurricane, but the name?
Yeah, her name sounds too much like mine. Thank you.
We must have had a Hurricane Mary by now, right? I mean, other than
somebody. Oh, no. Mary's too sweet of a name.
I'm sure we
can't have a hurricane named Mary.
We had a hurricane Dave or Steve.
That would be terrible.
We have had a hurricane Steve, yes.
We have?
Yep.
Do
long time
damage?
Ago. I don't think it was. I think it was like a category one.
You got to try.
Maybe I just
was
had
it
a bad
Steve
weekend.
Or like Stefan or
I
something?
I think it was Hurricane Steve.
Really? It sounds weird.
Well, my mom's name is Sandy, and she was devastated after what happened in New Jersey.
Yeah, Sandy's a sweet name, too.
Sandy was mean. Yeah. Is there a Hurricane Jake?
Not that I'm aware of.
How about a Hurricane Mike?
Just last week.
Some of these one-syllable names, they don't seem to work as well.
Like Bob. There
Hurricane
be
Steve was in 1990, by the way.
90.
Should be Hurricane Bob.
Hurricane Bob would just be boring. Not that Bob's boring, but you think of Bob Newhart, don't you?
Just I know. Well, you're always going to think of someone.
Hurricane Gus.
So anyway, this Maria is the latest threat to the Caribbean, with Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands among those on alert. And obviously that's bad because both got slammed by Irma last week. Next, Chicago native Lena Waithe made Emmy history as the first black woman to win for comedy writing, which is pretty darn cool. Dean will do a complete rundown of the Emmys later. And finally, Jay Cutler's former home in Lake Forest is listed for $4.5 million. That's the only interesting Bears-related news this morning, because the rest of it's all bad, all bad. The Bears were actually worse than I thought, and I predicted a blowout Friday by Tampa, and they were never competitive in that game.
I didn't predict a blowout.
No, you and Amp
thought I thought Tampa Bay. Yeah, I thought it was going to be a close game. I didn't see that coming. I thought Glennon going back there would play better. He didn't play well. He didn't have a lot of help. It was just
fumbles.
I mean, if the
picks,
you know, everybody was quick.
Injuries,
no defense,
penalties,
injuries.
They got new injuries now. Everybody penalties. Was quick to jump on Tariq Cohen for that fumble, and it was a rookie mistake. It was a bad play. He's not going to make it again. But when you play rookies, that will happen once in a while.
Yep, no question about it. Meanwhile, around the NFL, just quickly, nobody's showing up for football in Los Angeles. I mean, nobody. Two home games yesterday had the combined crowd of what would have been a bad showing for one.
Well, the one, I don't think they can fit too many fans in there anyway, where the Chargers are playing in Carson. It's a soccer stadium, basically.
Right, but did they even have 20,000? I don't even think they had 20,000.
I'm not sure what the...
It was like a White Sox weeknight crowd. The Rams, they had a terrible crowd. Now, Coliseum, you got to have 70,000 for the thing to look full.
They had plenty of fans there Saturday night for USC Texas, didn't they?
Yeah.
So I have to tell you, my social media feed yesterday, people were over the Bears, and it just started. The season just started, and people are already over the Bears.
They're done?
They're just done.
They've checked out.
That's
it. Not a good sign.
Yeah.
But the good sports news of the weekend is the Cubs sweep the Cardinals, and the Hawks had a great training camp opener. Andre is off this morning.
He left something out there.
What I lose
sports wise this weekend?
Well, Northwestern. Yeah. We'll get to that. Okay. Northwestern, big win, big bounce.
You were forgetting about him.
No. Go Cats!
Coach Fitz always standing by in the announce booth. I missed like the first, 15, 20 minutes of the Emmys. So I missed the Sean Spicer roll-on, but I've seen the clip. It was funny.
It was very funny.
It was good. Mm-hmm. I love them showing Melissa McCarthy in the audience. That was hilarious.
And Colbert says, ladies and gentlemen, Melissa McCarthy.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't see her expression, but supposedly she wasn't laughing.
She was laughing.
She was laughing.
Oh, she was laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, why is the internet telling me she wasn't laughing?
I have no idea.
Maybe the internet's wrong.
There's never been a false statement on the internet, has there?
That's true.
That'd be ironic if we were arguing about a false statement about Sean Spicer. That'd be weird. Here's the clip.
What really matters to Donald Trump is ratings. You got to have the big numbers. And I certainly hope we achieve that tonight. Unfortunately, at this point, we have no way of knowing how big our audience is. I mean, is there anyone who could say how big the audience is? Sean, do you know?
will be the largest audience to witness an Emmys, period, both in person and around the world.
Wow, that really soothes my fragile ego. I can understand why you'd want one of these guys around. Melissa McCarthy, everybody, give it up.
Did he roll off as soon as he finished his statement?
No, he kind of lingered. There.
He hung out. Yeah,
hung out. You know, it's
and of course, he was too nervous, so he couldn't wait for the applause to die. He kind of jumped in a little early.
But he, it was weird because he almost sounded like he was doing Melissa McCarthy doing Sean Spicer.
Right.
I was kind of confused at first. I'm looking at him, going, "Is that really him?"
Funny. You know, it's a funny idea, and very smart by him because he's basically admitting he lied. He's making fun of himself, and now he can move on and have people hire him and have a few laughs. And he still doesn't violate his non-disclosure agreement, which, you know, Trump's first move is to sue you. So very smart by Sean Spicer to do that. A couple other clips from the Emmys last night. You want to go cut seven? Stephen Colbert, the Emmy Awards, Trump, more of that.
And we all know the Emmys mean a lot to Donald Trump, because he was nominated multiple times for Celebrity Apprentice, but he never won. Why didn't you give him an Emmy? I tell you this, if he had won an Emmy, I bet he wouldn't have run for president. So in a way, this is all your fault. Why? I thought you people loved morally compromised anti-heroes. You like Walter White. He's just Walter much wider.
And Alec Baldwin won. I thought his speech was great. I mean, you know, Alec Baldwin can be an obnoxious jerk, but, well, last night it was for the right reason. Listen.
I suppose I should say, at long last, Mr. President, here is your Emmy. Thank my wife. My wife and I had 3 children in 3 years, and we didn't have a child last year during the SNL season. I wonder if there's a correlation there. All you men out there, you put that orange wig on, it's birth control, trust me.
In other words, his wife, who is about, about 6 minutes older than his daughter?
Oh, she's beautiful, yeah.
Is her name like Hilaria?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Hilaria. No, that's
bizarre, isn't it? Anyway, congratulations to all involved with the Emmys. It really is a special night where multimillionaires get together to tell each other how wonderful they are and take home trophies, much like how you and I live.
Yeah, it is. And I noticed at one point, I think in the monologue, where Colbert is looking at Oprah in the front row and kind of had a few jokes about her. She didn't look amused.
Hmm.
So it was kind of interesting. There was a little bit. Now, I don't know if she was just kind of playing that she
playing
was.
Oprah.
Playing Oprah.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't get why she got to have the front row seat.
She's Oprah.
Well, yeah, I guess, but
she can sit anywhere she wants.
Now, is she going to be on, what, 60 Minutes now, or Dateline? What's she going to be
60 Minutes. She can sit on stage and just kick her feet the whole night.
She's got some new glasses that are pretty cool.
She's Oprah. Vic Vaughn's in for Andrea this morning, and she has the big story, Dave.
And it is sponsored by Gilkey Window Company. Vic?
Thanks, Dave. This hour's big story. President Trump makes his debut at the United Nations General Assembly. He'll come face to face with that organization that he heavily criticized as a candidate.
The United Nations is not a friend of democracy. It's not a friend to freedom. It's not a friend even to the United States of America.
The president says he wants to see major changes to the organization and cuts to the UN budget. President Trump will meet with senior leaders of the UN and other world leaders this morning to discuss reforming it. Now, this meeting comes during a week where there are a number of critical foreign policy issues on the agenda. Climate change, North Korea will be front and center as the United States tries to rally support to rein it in, to slow or halt its nuclear aspirations. President Trump is expected to meet with South Korea's president today on that matter. Two leaders not attending the meetings are China's president and Russia's president. Both are seen as critical in pressuring North Korea, but Trump will not have the chance to make his case to them in person. Another issue on the agenda will happen to the Iran nuclear deal. The U.S. has signaled it may withdraw from it, and many of our allies still support it. That's this hour's big story. Now WGN Traffic, here's Mary Vanneveld.
Getting heavy on the inbound. Eaton's about 25 minutes from Lake Hook Road to the Kennedy. The inbound side of the Kennedy is up to 55 minutes from O'Hare. Same outbound with an accident at Harlem being cleared out of the left lane. Inbound Eisenhower, 52 from 53 and about 38 from Mannheim. Outbound 36 to 53. Inbound Stevenson, 48 from the Tri-State. The Ryans, 25 from 95th. Bishop Ford, not too bad. 57 hits the brakes from 115th. Tollways are good. In Niles, an accident. Milwaukee and Harlem. For traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Mary Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now. I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
So your voice of John DeCause.
Central DuPage Hospital. Call Dr. Morse right now.
John DeCause, been gone for a few days. He'll return, I think, this week. Might be early next week.
Will we play match game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, match game could have been the thing that knocked him out of work for a few days.
It might have been.
Dr. Kevin Most on the road in Washington, D.C. this morning for some big shot medical meeting, I assume. Is that right?
It's for a medical meeting. I'm not sure about big shots. But
I believe it's called the Big Shot Medical Meeting.
Right. No, I'm here for the American Hospital Association meeting, and I'll be surrounded in a room full of people much smarter than I, talking about healthcare marketplace stability, the expansion of Medicare, opioids. You know, so it's actually a really good meeting with a lot of smart people besides myself.
Is there an opportunity for all of you to take a field trip over to Congress and go, what exactly do you people do?
Yeah, actually, we'll meet all day today. We'll meet half a day tomorrow. And then many of us will go up on the Hill and talk to whatever legislators or support staff that we can to discuss some major issues in this country.
Well done, and good luck with it. All right, this is a tough topic, but one we need to tackle. Suicide Prevention Week just ended. As most people listen to the show with any regularity know, I lost two friends to suicide over the course of, I don't know, 5 years, maybe a little longer. You get an education in it you never want. But there's some very important things to know, and let's start with the medical side of it.
Yeah, you know, and you make a good point. It's touched all of us. And the medical side of it, to be honest with you, is we need your help. Doctors need your help to prevent suicides because patients don't walk in too often saying, I want to commit suicide. Sometimes in the emergency room that happens. Sometimes we see them after an attempt. But the vast majority of these patients, we need you as family members and friends to help us identify these individuals because we don't get it in just a physical exam in a doctor's office unless that patient's ready to share it. But there's a lot of signs out there that we need you to identify in friends and family to get these people help.
Now, you know this personally as well. You had a loss.
I did. Growing up, I had four really close, tight friends, Ray Foley, Mike Moran, John O'Donnell, and myself. We hung up around completely, all the time, totally, all the way through high school and college. And John O'Donnell took his life, and not one of us saw it coming.
It's the type of thing, too, that when I went through mine, one was not as big a surprise, but was awful, obviously, and the other was a complete shock. So when you speak of the medical world needing help, my experience was this. You learn that the things you don't want to say are as important as the things you do say. And the things you don't want to say are, you'll feel better tomorrow, or you have so much to live for, or you need to be stronger, or you need to snap out of it. None of those are true, because what somebody needs to do, if they reach out and they open up to talk, they need to talk. And they just need you to say, what can I do to help, and why are you so sad, and what's bothering you at this level, and just shut up and listen.
Absolutely. You know, I can tell you myself, when it happened, I was angry. I was angry at him
right.
for doing it. I was angry at myself for not identifying and not knowing what to look for here. And like you said, these are individuals that, when you look at statistics, the people that attempt suicide and don't commit suicide often will say, all I really wanted to do was to have somebody sit and listen to me and understand what I'm going through and help me get to a place, a better place.
Right.
And unfortunately, we are still have that social stigma around depression and suicide that we need to get over. And we need to get past because we need your help to prevent this. Suicide should be a preventable illness in this country. Just like we eradicated polio, this is one where we should be able to stop it.
There's an amazing statistic in your notes that I certainly wasn't aware of, and that's for every 25 people that try to commit suicide, one die?
Yep. So you can imagine that. We have over a million attempts at suicide in a year, and yet we still haven't identified those people before they attempt it. And it's, I can't drive that message home enough. Is, you know, look for these individuals who, you know, you're a big Cubs fan. If you told me, a Hawks fan, if you told me that you didn't want to go to a Hawks game, or you said something about a major change in the way that you're sleeping, or your mood was way off, those are signs for me to start looking at you and saying, hey, Steve, let's sit, let's talk, let's go on, what's going on?
Right.
You know, if I asked you to play golf and you said no,
right,
without a reason, that should raise a red flag for me.
And the thing is, Doc, as you well know, there are a lot of people who just can't have those conversations. It's just too uncomfortable for them as ever. But if you're the one that's identified it, you need to reach out to a third friend, a mutual friend, a family member, somebody who can have that talk, who can sit down with a person and say, hey, listen, I know you're struggling here. Let's talk about it. Because it doesn't have to be you, but silence isn't going to help anything.
You know, and sitting and listening and talking is one thing, but then making sure you take that next step to get to do an intervention to yep. whether you're going to get them in help right away, you're going to talk to their family, you're going to talk to a doctor. Those are the things that are going to prevent this, and we need to get to that point. I mean, especially, I want to drive something home, too. You know, when my friend did it, he was in his 30s, so it's not like this was towards the end of his life or anything. He was very successful. So those are not signs that we look for. But I can tell you probably one of the biggest concerns that suicide is the leading cause of death in children aged 10 to 14. And it's the third leading cause of death in adults aged 15 to 24. So look at that age group as well and look for those signs. We're seeing bullying making a big impact here. And these are the kids. Watch for them. Are they socially isolating themselves? Do they have major mood swings? Do they start to not care about how they look? Is their grooming uncharacteristic? So look, and this is not just adults, so look at kids as well.
Yeah, and you can't walk it off and go, it's none of my business. It's all of our business. You know, it includes coworkers and people that you have even mild contact with. And, again, you don't have to just jump into somebody's life and go, hey, you're going to sit down, you're going to talk about it. But, Doc, my finding is that it's important to, and this sort of amplifies what you're talking about, have a plan. So when you sit down and you have that conversation, you make an offer. You know, let's have a plan here. Can I help you find a therapist to talk to? Can I drive you to a group session? Can I help you figure out who that is? You know, and I'm going to call you tomorrow and we'll get this figured out. It doesn't have to be right now, but I'm going to call you tomorrow. We're going to get it figured out. You know, so there's a goal and a plan. And like you said, you don't just have the conversation and walk away.
Yeah. And you make a very good point. You know, if you have this individual that you're really concerned about, make a contract with them. Say, hey, you know what? You and I are great friends. This is what we're going to do. Before you do anything, you are going to call me. You're going to talk to me. I'm going to touch base with you every day. And you're going to be there. So, you know, making that contract with them while they're trying to get them help often is what they need. They need to know that someone understands that they're suffering and that they're fighting these demons and that they have some help to do that.
Doc, how do you handle pushback from them, though? I mean, what if they just want no part of it?
Yeah, and you know what? You'll probably see some of those individuals, but stay on them and make sure that they get professional help. Once you feel like you're over your ski tips and you can't handle this, the next step is to make sure they get professional help. And whether that's taking them into an emergency room or whether that's impacting their family and making sure that they get into their doctor, because at that point, that's when we can step up and make a difference after you've identified this individual with a major concern.
It really comes down to this, and that is at some point when somebody kills themselves, they get to a point where they go, that's the better idea. The better idea, as opposed to getting up tomorrow morning, is to dying today. And as hard as that might be for you or I or anybody else to imagine, be that level of sadness, depression, illness is extremely treatable and extremely fixable. The person has to feel that they have hope that somebody else cares enough to listen, and you can provide that. So what do you recommend people do if they think they don't have a resource? I mean, do you need to have therapists in your hip pocket? Do you need to be able to suggest something specific?
No, I mean, even, you know, there's a national suicide prevention hotline, and you guys can post it, 800-273-8255. Get them on the phone and tell them your situation and where you're standing. They will give you great advice because this is what they do 24/7. So they will help you. And if you can get that individual on the phone with them, they will help them as well. We have to realize that, you know, the funding for mental health in this country is woefully underfunded, and it's something that we need to look at as well. And the opportunities for people to get help. You know, unfortunately, across this country, we have counties without a single psychiatrist in the county, if you can imagine
that. That's amazing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very fortunate. Central DuPage, we have 25 psychiatrists just on our medical staff alone. But there are counties where there aren't these mental health individuals. And when you look at some of the states that have the biggest problems with suicide, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, those are very rural countries that don't count, excuse me, states that don't have a bunch of psychiatrists there to help these individuals.
And getting back to the kid thing, which is an amazingly depressing and terrible statistic about how many kids are killing themselves, as a parent or somebody that loves a kid that you think might be in trouble, I had a guidance counselor in high school, Malcolm Head, Mr. Head, who helped save me. And though I wasn't on the road to kill myself, I was certainly on a bad road. He stepped up. And high school guidance counselors are... To me, it's one of the more underrated professions on the planet with the great work they do every day. So even if you're a parent and you say, I don't know how to talk to my kid, reach out to your school's guidance counselor. Tell them what you're concerned about. They will reach out to your kid at school.
You know, you make a good point. And it's not only guidance counselors, it's teachers as well.
Right. These are like a favorite teacher, like somebody they've talked about fondly in the past.
Yep. Because these are the individuals that during the school year where a lot of these stressors are put on these kids, they're the ones seeing them 6, 7, 8 hours a day. So, you know, heads up to those teachers to look for some of these things. Because I can tell you that the bullying aspect to this is huge. And the social stigma and the social interaction that kids have right now is very, very tight on them. You know, the kid that's not fits in at school or isn't doing well in school from a grades point of view, those are those individuals that say, you know what, I'm hopeless. I don't have a chance. I'm a burden on my parents. Those are the ones we need to identify early.
It's a suicide prevention hotline number again, 800-273-8255. Suicidepreventionlifeline.org is the website, 24/7, 365. These are people who walk the walk and talk the talk and will not be judgmental. And I guess that's the only thing else I'd add, Doc, is don't be judgmental. Listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Do not be judgmental. Try to understand. You can't sit in their shoes often, but at least listen to them. And you know what? When we get really serious, if someone tells you that they have a plan and they have a means to do it, those are the ones that you have to act on right away. Those are the ones that you don't say, okay, let's make sure we get you help here in the next few days. No, those are the ones. The individuals also that seemed to be down and depressed and all of a sudden seem to be relieved and happy, that's a signal for us of concern, because that individual often has made their decision, made their plan, and now they feel relieved knowing that they've made that decision. That's a big red flag for us.
Yeah.
So if somebody does improve like that, make sure you get them in. Do not just say, oh, you're better? Okay, great.
It's the exact experience I had with a very good friend of mine. She had planned it for a year, all the way down to making sure her dog would be taken care of. She had paid her bills. She had written the checks and stamped the envelopes and left them on the table. There were a couple of notes on what people could do. She was even researched the way to die so she would not leave a mess, literally.
Yep.
I mean, so and said goodbye to the people at work on a Friday and died that weekend. So, yeah, 1,000% right, and I think it's great information. Doc, thank you for it. I'd say have fun in Washington, but I'm not sure that's what's going to happen for you there today.
Well, I'll tell you, like I said, it'll be very interesting. We take about In our committee alone, there's about 35 individuals who are chief medical officers, chief nursing officers from across the country. And it's great for me because I get to hear what's going on in Wyoming. I'll have David Perlstein, who's a great friend of mine who runs a hospital in the Bronx. I love sitting talking to him to hear what he's struggling with because it's totally different than what I'm struggling with.
Sure.
And getting that aspect of what's going on in this country is going to help us shape some policy.
Northwestern Medicine getting it done again. And, Doc, we'll see you when you get back to town.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Northwestern Medicine making people better by making medicine better. He's good, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Better resource than Doc? I don't think so, Dave.
No.
I don't think so.
I can't think of one.
An animal!
Dan Hampt anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Well, you know, he sort of Nostradamus this on Friday. On this show on Friday, Hamp said, look, they're coming off not playing. The emotion of the hurricane. They know Mike Glennon. They know why they got rid of Mike Glennon. Hamp said this could be bad. And it was based on Hamp's advice that I predicted a blowout. Did you guys look up what score I predicted? Didn't I say like 31-10? And the final was 27-9?
Yeah, I think it was something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, look, we didn't see anything remotely approaching the level of professional football yesterday as the Hall of Famer Dan Hampton joins us, sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Or should I call you Nostradamus?
No, I got to tell you, it was with great sorrow that I was, as you said, pretty accurate. Another John Fox masterpiece. I'll tell you, you know, it's the thing that makes it all so perplexing about this natural disaster we left down in Tampa was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, due to the hurricane situation, the last 15 days, they'd only practiced three times. Now, just think about that. You know, this is a team that has yet to play an NFL game. We have. They've only had, you know, 3 days of practice over the last 2 weeks and a day. They had all the conditions and issues with the flooding in the homes and the power out. And we go down, and second play of the game, John Fox, we have to call a timeout because we're not prepared. And yet, they're the ones that haven't practiced, haven't played.
Exactly.
They're the ones that are unprepared. And the way Mike Glennon played was spot on about what we talked about Friday, guys. Like I said, you're not a king in your own castle. They all know all the things you don't do right or you can't do, or all your frailties, all your shortcomings. And the whole first quarter was just a tragic comedy. You know, the way that Mike Glennon melted down, the Tariq Cohen, the kid that had basically stolen our hearts in a fit of megalomania, thinking he can do anything, tries to, clown somebody and take the punt return. And by the way, what you doing on punt return? You know, this is a kid that is the only difference maker we have on offense. Jordan Howard is a shell of his former self. Looks to me like he's pouting a little bit. And to put Cohen on punt return where we could possibly lose the only player on offense we have that can separate, boy, there's a lot going on here that's not good.
All right, so let's start with Coach Fox. Coach Fox is in his third year. He's never won a game in September. That's an amazing statistic.
Clueless and winless in September. That's
yes.
A pretty good combination.
Yeah, and a statistic again that I heard yesterday, the Bears recovered a fumble yesterday for the first time in almost a year. These are all statistics that in normal circumstances ought to scare the daylights out of you if you want to actually run a professional football team. At some point, it has to be John Fox's problem to the extent that, well, it just didn't work out here. When does that point come?
It's rapidly approaching. I, much like the horrible fall TV schedule, it's coming.
We're going to cancel them.
one thing that we talked about, Taz and OB and I yesterday at length, is, you know, redundancy. How many times has the team went out, played flat, played unprepared, was, you know, befuddled by just simple things. Let's talk about Mike Glennon. Okay. Whether you like the kid, or you're happy that he got it paid $18.5 million for what we saw yesterday, or you're not happy. The bottom line is, and we've said this for years, you know, quarterback it's a strange beast. It's you don't have to have the arm that throws through a rock wall. You know, you have to know where to throw the ball and do it in a timely, efficient manner. That's it. Now, if you're 6'5" and can throw it a long way, all those things, man, then you got a chance to be, Tom Brady. But on both of the interceptions yesterday in junior high, those would be totally incomprehensible and unacceptable. And if you go back and watch the film, it's pretty obvious. And we saw this all the time with the lower echelon quarterbacks where, we always talk about a progression. And what is a progression? Well, okay, your first read is the out. If that's covered, that means a safety. Then that means a tight end is open in the flat and so on and so forth. And every quarterback is supposed to learn a progression on every one of the route trees that is called on pass plays. And it was obvious that Glennon, for whatever reason, thinking he was, clever, he completed six in a row, on some of the slants because they're playing cover two. Anyway, it was like he predetermined in his mind before the snap of the ball on that first one to throw it to Sims, the tight end. When there was a guy inside his jersey, he was so close. He could have been shoulder pads on the back of the tight end, and he throws the ball. And Sheehan, the tight end, the rookie, was wide open out in the flats. So, I mean, and then it happened again on the second one. So, you just can't make this stuff up. Bellamy was jammed at the line of scrimmage. He does a bad job of getting off the jam. The corner is on his hip. Anyone looking at it would know he's covered. And yet Glennon turns and throws the ball almost reactively without looking.
The NFL fundamentals that are missing, it's Nostradamus, huh? See?
Yeah.
Nostradamus will return in just a second. Dave Ennett will explain what happened and why it'll be fixed.
You think I can explain
that? Well, you saw a great Northwestern game this weekend.
I did.
I bet you can transfer some of that knowledge. We all want the same thing. We want the Bears to play better. Want them to win. Want them to return to glory. Want this to be what it was intended to be. As a founding member of the National Football League, one of the premier championship franchises year after year after year. Have we ever looked farther away from that moment than yesterday? I don't know. Jamaica's Violet Brown, the world's oldest person, died at 117 yesterday. You think the Bears had nothing to do with that? I think she was watching the game.
I don't know if that was part of it.
All right, Dan Hampton. Maybe. Dan Hampton returns. Dave, what do you want to say to him?
Hemp, you've been on teams where... What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say the Bears killed an 117-year-old person yesterday.
Yeah, I think it's true.
And what you just said, real quick, we laugh all the time, and me and the guys, Kaz and the guys would think off WWDD. What's that? What would Ditka do? I'm sitting here during the break thinking, what would Dickie have done if he was on the sidelines watching that game yesterday? I'm just saying, you can't make this stuff up. And your point about everyone is beyond, exasperation about how the charter franchise is now a bunch of lackeys that we get, slapped around, and nobody respects the Chicago Bears anymore. It's sickening.
Well, let's go back to some teams you played on where you were challenged offensively and had an outstanding defense. When the offense is turning the ball over, as they were yesterday, basically their first three touches, two possessions sandwiched around the fumble by Cohen, what sort of toll does that take on the defense, which I think had people feeling a little better, aside from the the plays to the tight end the week before against Atlanta, played generally better, but yesterday, you know, did give up some plays, and it seemed like as the game went on and the gap got bigger, it was tough to come back.
Absolutely. And if there is any, you know, silver lining on this team is, yeah, the defense is scratching and fighting, you know. But I got to tell you, in the third and fourth quarter, saw a lot of guys, and it was hot. You know, it's pretty hot. And, you know, I've told you many times, training camp now is daycare. Nobody's really, you know, trying to get in the tip-top shape. You know, I was thinking about this. Somebody called in to the post-game show and talked about Walter and how he would condition himself in the off-season. He would be in better condition in the off-season than everybody today is during. But that's another day, another time. I got it. But the defense made some strides. But Danny Trevathan had two holding calls on third down, you know, and long situations that kept them on the field and allowed Tampa to go ahead and drive for touchdowns. Willie Young had one. We make mistakes. And, you know, when it was hot and we were talking about a lot of this in the pregame, when you know, the heat makes fatigue, and fatigue makes you a coward because you quit. And the first thing that happens on defense is you miss tackles and you loaf and make mental errors. And on offense, you make mistakes and you have turnovers. And that's exactly what happened. We are we're a garden variety of football team that is subject to all the frailties. Hey, oh, well, when it's, you know, when we go on the road, oh, the crowd noise bothers us and the heat, you know. Every little excuse, we can't overcome any obstacle. And yesterday was just another case in point. And, you know, you started off the program talking about the fact that John Fox is 0-4 September. Now, you know and I know that in any endeavor, if you put yourself so far in the hole when you first start off, it's just a matter of time till you break the team's will or your will, or you do, oh, well, I can't, you know, mentally, I can't overcome all this. I can't come back, blah, blah, blah. Now we're 0-2. Now we got Pittsburgh coming in, another one of the founding franchises. They're playing pretty good. They're 2-0. They destroyed Minnesota yesterday. So, you know, what are we going to do? And after the game, the first thing Fox said was, no, we're not going to put in Mitchell Trubisky. After anyone on the planet Earth would say, Mike Glennon deserves to be benched after that horrendous performance.
Right.
But refusing to do the, you know, Margaret Thatcher said, you know, after we exhausted all other possibilities, we finally do the right thing. Well, that's what needs to be done. But instead, we're not even going to think about it. We're not even going to talk about it. So the team is being held hostage by a promise from Fox to Glennon. And you know and I know, the fans, we realize, hey, we know where we're going with this kid. We need to turn this thing around. But no, we're going to be held hostage, and everyone on the football team. When that kid was playing in the preseason, I know it's preseason. When he was playing, they were Akeem Hicks, they were all up. They were all on the sideline standing there watching this kid saying, this is our future. This is what we need to have as our quarterback. Now, we're going to find out this week. Who, you know, who's going to, what would you say, overcome and hopefully, you know, the clueless decisions that we've seen for 2 years and two games, hopefully we're not going to continue down that road.
This is why we love Hamp, because there's no other, and I'm telling you, no other NFL Hall of Famer who's dropping Margaret Thatcher quotes this morning.
No,
I'll tell you that
about
right
that.
Now.
That was great.
Very impressive.
It's 7:20 in the morning.
Exactly. Hamp, Dave handed me game notes.
That's the official game summary from the NFL.
The official NFL game summary from the National Football League. Temperature 88 degrees at kickoff. Wind chill, 100.
What?
The fact that they list the
wind chill
at 100 degrees. Now, having said that, to bring it full circle back to your point, Walter chose to run the hill. He chose to run the hill in the offseason. He chose to come to work in shape. He chose, as you did, Hamp, and everybody else did. This is not a generational thing. This is professional pride. I can sit here and be in talk show shape because that's what my job demands. The job in the National Football League demands that kind of dedication to win. The reason you guys won is because you cared, because Walter cared, and you have to ask how much the guys on this team care. Talent takes you so far, heart will take you a little farther. You played the game at that level. You're in the Hall of Fame for a reason, but that's me as a fan, and that's what I see.
Well, I appreciate it. And you're exactly right. And that's the way Singletary approached the game. Fincy, you know, McMichael. At some point, you have to decide. You know, and again, this you don't have to do this for 40 years. It's not like a civil servant, you know, that you're going to be working for. No, you've got a window, and you better do everything you can to maximize whatever opportunities and potential you have. I got that. But when we go down to Tampa, and Dick Stockton, the Dick Stockton that we've heard for 40 years, says that our best weapon was our punter. That tells you we have got issues beyond guys just not being in shape. So, again, this is it's a critical week in the John Fox legacy. What happens this week? A lot of decisions have to be made. Hopefully, they'll be the right decisions. And one last thing. One time we're getting ready to play a playoff game, and Fritz came to me and said, what do you think the wind chill factor is? And I said, oh, it's going to be probably 10 below. And I heard him tell, he turned and told Richard Dent, he said, the wind chill factor is going to be minus 10. And I said, what did you say? He said, you know, the wind chill factor, how cold it is on your windshield. So that tells you everything you need to know. About
the windshield factor.
Conditions in the locker room. We knew them all.
Tom Skilling.
On your windshield.
Tom Skilling was not present. It's Nostradamus. He called it, sorry to say. And we'll break it down to coming up with another Bears weekend against the Steelers. But we get the Steelers to take the weekend off. Thank you, Hemp. Back with the big story next on 720 WGN. And again, all that sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. We got a texter that claims that Steve Grzanich may have just had a slip of the tongue and said the new Foxconn plant in Wisconsin would be creating people. Are they making people?
I believe that's true.
I don't know if it's accurate. Jake, see if you can find a clip, because if we have Steve Grzanich saying the plant's making people, that's a piece of sound we're going to have to use over and over again.
Could he have said the plant's making people happy?
I don't know. I hope not.
He denies everything, Steve.
The listeners never miss a trick. Ryan Noble standing by from CNN. You've never made a mistake on the air, have you, Ryan?
Oh, never. I also heard that he was making people. And, in the Trump era, I think anything's possible. So I think he may be onto something there.
All right. Well, we got to do a traffic break and come back and talk to you. But I have one question before we do any of this. And that is, were you offended, like much of the internet appears to have been, by Sean Spicer's appearance last night? Because call me crazy, Ryan, I just thought it was funny.
Yes, come on. People need to lighten up, you know. I mean, the fact that he's able to poke fun at himself shows that he actually is a human being and not some sort of cyborg that was created for the Trump administration. I've known Sean for a long time. I know that he does have a good sense of humor, and everybody should just lighten up, really.
And this is as close as you're going to get until his non-disclosure agreement runs out to having Sean Spicer say, the whole thing was a nightmare. I'm glad it's over. Someone please hire me. Because that's what he deserves after last night. It was a joke. Yeah. All right, Mayor, listen now. This is a highly alert texter from the 773 that pointed this out. Investigative reporting at its finest. Steve Grzanich has apparently uncovered a factory in Wisconsin that makes people. Listen.
And Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker plans to sign that $3 billion incentive package for Foxconn technology today. He'll be in Racine County. It looks like that's where that big plant is going to go, possibly creating thousands of people over the next 10 years.
That is tremendous. Oh, that's the sound of the day. We don't even have that bit, but it is now the sound of the day from Steve Grzanich.
He's not here to defend himself.
How many people is it creating? I don't even know. It's something to say thousands.
He's had a little too much coffee.
We should know that, shouldn't we?
He's very busy creating people.
That can't be legal that they're making people.
Thousands of jobs.
Oh, here he comes.
Thousands of jobs. Your day's coming, man. Your day's coming.
My day?
Your day.
Pick an hour. Coming up, more with Ryan Nobles in just a second on 720 WGN.
Possibly creating thousands of people over the next 10 years.
Ryan Nobles is here, our friend Ryan Nobles from CNN. The UN meeting starts when? Today?
Yeah, today. That's when it's all kicking off. And, of course, the good thing we're looking for is the president's speech.
So
exactly what he's going to say about North Korea and everything.
Yeah, and this is a guy who said the United Nations is ridiculous. I believe he suggested we disband it and put up a Trump Tower. He's not a big UN fan. So was that room a little awkward for him to be in?
You know, I think there have been other, particularly Republican presidents, that have been pretty critical of the UN. I don't think anybody has been as direct in their criticism of the UN and its functions as Donald Trump. But I think that the delegates there are going to know what they're in for when he speaks. And that's been kind of a hallmark of the Trump presidency, is that with each new statement that borders on ridiculous, we are desensitized a little bit to what he has to say. So I'm not quite sure what he could say at this speech that would be, you know, so damaging that it would hurt our relationship with our allies around the world. It seems as though the work that's being done behind the scenes is more important, but yet whenever an American president speaks at the UN General Assembly, it's going to get huge headlines all around the world. And I would imagine this will be teleprompter Trump, which will be a little bit different, but obviously he's not one to shy away from a controversy when given the opportunity.
So the big concern, obviously, for the rest of us today is that he doesn't go off prompter and say something ridiculous to light up Kim Jong-un again.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think that he will. You know, generally, you know, I think back the last time he gave that speech shortly after one of the North Korean provocations, when he went down to an army base here in the D.C. area and talked about his Afghanistan strategy. That's when he was, you know, very measured in his speech, and he didn't go off prompter at all. He seems to be, you know, I don't know if responsible is the right word, but he seems to at least understand the gravity of those situations. I imagine that is what happens today. But, you know, it comes against the backdrop of him over the weekend tweeting about Kim Jong-un and calling him Rocket Man. You know, he obviously there, you know, it's out there that he has been very vocal in the idea that the United States is not afraid to use military action. And now even the supposed calmer heads in his administration, like the National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, have also suggested that military options remain on the table. Now, what exactly those military options are, we don't know. But at some point, if you're going to keep threatening this, you know, you're going to have to actually have to do something to make those threats meaningful.
Twitter continues to be the lightning rod of trouble for Trump. Over the weekend, when I first heard about this, before I saw it, I was inclined to think, much like I thought about the Sean Spicer moment, that maybe we all need to lighten up. Then I actually saw the retweet of Trump hitting a golf ball that is Twitter photoshopped into looking like it hits Hillary in the back of, in her back, literally, and it leads to her falling on an airplane, which is a famous bit of video where she tripped at the top step of her plane. This is who he is. This is who he is. He's a bully. He's a bad guy, and we shouldn't be surprised by this. But I wouldn't take this the same way I took the Sean Spicer thing. I'm not surprised people are offended by this. He's the friggin' president of the United States. Have some self-discipline. Why would you retweet that?
And the other thing I don't understand is the obsession with Hillary Clinton. I was at a rally over the weekend. They described it as the mother of all rallies.
Which the Juggalos.
Well, this was separate from the
No, I'm kidding.
That was a whole other rally. There were rallies all over Washington, D.C. this weekend. But this was a group of Trump supporters, and it was really in response to Charlottesville. They wanted to have kind of a pro-Trump rally that was positive, not one that was going to hammer people. And I cannot tell you how many of these speakers got up there and spent all of their time just crushing Hillary Clinton. You know, there were lock her up chants frequently throughout the day and suggestions that she should be put in prison. And,
let it go, people.
There were multiple times where I just had to step back and say, you won the election. You know, I don't remember,
right,
you know, Barack Obama being obsessed with John McCain or you know, George W. Bush being obsessed with John Kerry. Like, you know, when someone loses an election, they kind of go off into, you know, obscurity for a certain period of time. And certainly there's an argument to be made that Mrs. Clinton is putting herself out there quite a bit lately.
But it doesn't mean he has to take the bait and talk about it, nor do his people. There's a lot of insecurity and sensitivity that needs to go away. Just grow up. All right, before we run out of time, how was your birthday?
Yeah, I had a great birthday. I turned 41. My family treated me right, as they always do. My wife made my favorite carrot cake, which she does better than anybody in the whole world. Only downside was that my long-suffering Buffalo Bills took it on the chin yesterday in a 9-6 barn burner in Charlotte yesterday. So come to expect that with the Bills and my birthday.
Ryan Nobles at 41, Dave, I didn't look as good as Ryan Nobles does when I was 21. Ridiculous.
Not bad.
Couldn't be more bitter.
And the Bills will bounce back, Ryan.
Couldn't be more bitter.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Maybe in a decade. I had a friend of me say, you turned 21, right, Ryan? I go, no, not quite. There is a one in there. And she said to me, well, your 21st birthday turned 20.
Well, there you go.
The most depressing thing I have ever heard.
Ah, wait. There's more depression to come. Happy birthday, buddy. I'm sorry I missed it, but I got you a Juggalos T-shirt, and I'll be sending it your way.
That'll be the best birthday gift I get. Thank you, Steve.
That's Ryan Nobles, at Ryan Nobles on CNN and at Ryan Nobles all over social media. We're back with the news next, and then Dean on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
Hollywood. Well, kiss me good. 8:14 now. He stayed up all night just thinking about the Emmys.
Oh, I was just so exhilarated by it all. How could you get even one wink of sleep?
I thought it was one of the better award shows I've seen in a long time.
I agree.
Think they fixed a lot of problems. I thought Colbert was terrific.
I thought Stephen Colbert was very funny, very topical. I've already had emails from people, shocked that he was doing political material.
Apparently they're not familiar with his work.
you were shocked that a Hollywood gathering with Stephen Colbert hosting it would be somehow political,
right?
That was what it was. I thought that there was some pretty funny stuff there. You want to hear a little Colbert?
I got a little something here that you, I think, have played on TV this morning. And it's Colbert from his, it's from his monologue. And frankly, he's gotten to the problem we have in America today and whose fault it is.
And we all know the Emmys mean a lot to Donald Trump, because he was nominated multiple times for Celebrity Apprentice, but he never won. Why didn't you give him an Emmy? I tell you this, if he had won an Emmy, I bet he wouldn't have run for president. So in a way, this is all your fault. Why? I thought you people loved morally compromised anti-heroes. You like Walter White. He's just Walter much whiter.
It's a great joke. It's a great joke.
He was great. And the guy that played Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live was one of the four wins for SNL last night. Alec Baldwin taking Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy last night. This is what he had to say.
I suppose I should say, at long last, Mr. President, here is your Emmy. Thank my wife. My wife and I had three children in 3 years, and we didn't have a child last year during the SNL season. I wonder if there's a correlation there. All you men out there, you put that orange wig on, it's birth control, trust me.
Can you imagine if Alec Baldwin's wearing the wig around the house?
That would be creepy. That would be very creepy.
And his child bride couldn't be more beautiful, the more proud of him as she sat there.
Melissa McCarthy also won one of the awards for SNL for her portrayal of Sean Spicer, who nobody expected
a good moment
to show up on the Emmys. It's a little bit visual, but kind of self-explanatory as well.
What really matters to Donald Trump is ratings. You got to have the big numbers. And I certainly hope we achieve that tonight. Unfortunately, at this point, we have no way of knowing how big our audience is. I mean, is there anyone who could say how big the audience is? Sean, do you know?
This will be the largest audience to witness an Emmys, period, both in person and around the world.
Wow, that really soothes my fragile ego. I can understand why you'd want one of these guys around. Melissa McCarthy, everybody, give it up.
So
it's funny.
Sean Spicer, Spicy Spice, coming out, pushing a podium the way that Melissa McCarthy did. So Sean Spicer spoofing Melissa McCarthy, spoofing him.
And making fun of himself.
And making fun of himself.
And also announcing without saying it completely, you know, out there and violating his non-disclosure agreement. Of course I was lying. Of course I hated the job. I thought it was a great moment. The internet got very angry, though, Dean. There are a lot of angry people on the internet.
Yes, I've heard from many of them this morning.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Listen, I'm sorry to break it to you folks. That's funny. You don't need to analyze it. It's just funny.
I've had, much of the comedy, the majority of the comedy last night was at the president's expense.
Yep.
You know, if you don't think it's funny, then you don't think it's funny. Then that's all.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand. Correct me if I'm wrong, but some of the music that was playing with the band when the guests were leaving or coming, some of that music I don't think correlated with the show they were in. It didn't seem like it anyway.
No, I missed all that.
It almost seemed. I did notice that. It seemed like it was for the next guest, like one of the next presenters that was coming up, more than the, like,
yeah. like they were one ahead or something.
I don't know. It was just
like
odd.
They were one, yeah, it
and
did
the,
seem like
the goofy. What's his name? Jermaine Fowler.
The announcer.
He was kind of obnoxious, wasn't he?
It was different.
He was screaming all the time and yelling about, and it was. He made it kind of jokey. I don't know.
They were trying to appeal to the kids.
More like a hip hop MC than a traditional.
He was in studio with us. He was late. Well, Chris, it was 8 o'clock in the morning.
Very funny.
He was in studio with us. He was laid back, kind of quiet. And of course, Judd Hirsch was here, and that was, you know, Judd's not quiet. It'd been funny if Judd Hirsch was the announcer. How late is this show going to go?
I would have liked that better.
I have a headache. I want to go home. the big winners last night were the Handmaid's Tale. That won five Emmy Awards, tying with Big Little Lies that also got five. So those were the big winners last night. Saturday Night Live wound up just last night with four awards, but they have the Creative Emmy Awards that they give out like a week ahead of time. And SNL won a whole boatload of awards for that.
Lorne Michaels was there to accept, and he came up and he did. I've spent a little time with Lorne Michaels, not a lot, but, knowing people on the show through the years. It's just funny how people treat Lorne. And, like, he went up first, and all of the people related to the show came up behind him, and they were so deferential. It's like nobody said, hey, Lorne, thank this person or that person. Lorne, it was a funny guy, said his joke about, you know, I thought in 1975 it would be the wildest season ever. I was wrong. And then they all walked off together. But I'm not even sure Lorne knew everyone was behind him.
And it also looked to me like everyone who was behind him, they were looking down at the floor, like they know that they're not supposed to look at him directly.
I hope Lorne doesn't get angry.
Yeah, I think I got the sense that there's
he's the king, man. Yeah. He's the king.
Yeah. Well, you know, all those years on SNL, he's doing something right.
A friend of mine told me a great story about Lorne Michaels. He's a big shot in TV, and he goes to Saturday Night Live, and Lorne wants to give him a tour because he's, you know, another big shot in TV, and he takes him around, and there was a boat on the set that night for a bit. And the run-through is a couple hours before the show, and then from the run-through, they decide what stays in the show. So the boat is in a sketch that doesn't make it. So Lorne tells him that if this boat doesn't make it, it's a $75,000 mistake, because what happens is the boat is made by two guys on Long Island. who then cut up the boat and then truck the boat to 30 Rock. The boat then is taken up in pieces to the SNL studio, where it's put back together by more union contractors and then placed on the set as just a place for two actors to sit in a bit that ultimately didn't make the show.
That's wild.
That's how you spend show business money.
That's wild. That's wild. And isn't that interesting that they go through all of that, yet we still see some awful sketches.
Oh, it's amazing.
That wind up on the air. They go through that vetting process.
Have you ever been to the dress rehearsal?
Never have been there, ever.
Yeah, the dress rehearsal is pretty fascinating because in a big shot in show business like you, Dean, you can get tickets to anything. But the dress rehearsal is interesting because you do get that moment where they're taste testing everything. Yeah. And I've seen stuff in a few dress rehearsals I've been to where you go, well, that'll be funny. They can tweak it and make it, and it doesn't end up in the show. And like you said, something will be on that just stinks up the joint.
Right, that somehow made it through. And for those of you not in show business, it's called dress rehearsal because everyone in the audience is required to wear a dress.
That's right. It's an old show business vaudeville tradition. Speaking of dresses, I want to ask Dean about the fashion because Dean and I occasionally will cross-dress just because it's more comfortable. Stand by. Dean will have information on that. Mary has traffic right now.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
President Trump has arrived at the United Nations, Dean. It'd be funny if he just goes in the gift shop, buys a shirt, and leaves.
I'd like a magnet, please. Do you sell thimbles?
How was the fashion last night? I thought the ladies looked lovely.
I did not see any major gaffes last night.
Mary, any criticism of the dresses?
There was one girl right at the beginning. I don't like those plunging Vs in the front that expose
the boob showing ones.
Yes, that expose your chest, your whole thing. And I forgot.
I think you need
to
have fantastic boobs to wear those. Don't you?
This girl was like pretty flat, and I thought, wow. I don't know. It's not a good look. To me.
I think it's sexier when they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
You feel like they're going to explode.
Yeah.
I think it looks much more dignified.
My friend and yours, Dean, comedian Larry Miller, said it best. He said, there are times when you look at a beautiful woman in Hollywood and you think, if one button goes, I could see him. You know, that's the type of thing. That's how we think.
You are one classy broad, Steve Cocker.
That's how we think as men. So, yeah, you don't have to show it all. Come on.
Yeah, Zoe, use some of the imagination.
Zoe Kravitz, does that outfit ring a bell
Was that the end? Because I think I missed it.
She's part of the cast of Big Little Lies, so she did get on stage a couple of times. But it looked like sort of a feathered, I don't even know how you, it is kind of low plunging, but it was sort of like a black low plunging top and a long kind of orange peach, maybe colored dress, feathery. The whole thing looked really feathery. I thought that was really pretty.
Oh, I do remember now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was okay. What did you think of Jane Fonda and
I thought
company?
They were all very pretty.
So bad for Dolly Parton.
Oh, man.
Dolly Parton's got to appeal to her audience, which a lot of them are Trump voters. And Lily Tomlin on one side and Jane Fonda on the other, just tearing Trump up. And Dolly's looking like, oh, can I back up? Can I get out of here?
So goes to the boob jokes.
Dolly Parton does a boob and vibrator joke.
But I tell you, the amount of plastic surgery on those three, whoa.
Well, you know, you keep it in industry active.
Not Lily Tomlin, though.
Oh, yeah, she's had some.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
She didn't look.
Yeah, she had her eyes moved. About 6 inches.
She doesn't have any eyes.
They're on the side of her head like a fish now.
Oh, they're not.
But Jane Fonda, though, when you see her up close, looks very age appropriate.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
Okay, so it's obviously one of the good surgeons.
I thought that Nicole Kidman was really pretty last night.
Yeah.
And that, again, very low plunging, the beautiful red dress that she had on.
A lot of red last night.
There was a lot of red.
All right, so we agree the show was good. Colbert was good. The fashions were fine. Were the awards fine? Did anybody get hosed?
Yes. Stranger Things went in with, like, I think 18 nominations. Zero wins last night.
What do you make of that?
Zero wins. It was the Handmaid's Tale year last night for best drama. I mean, they won 5 awards. They won virtually everything. Stranger Things got hosed. Westworld went home empty last night, and so did Feud. And all of them had in the teens nominations last night. So
yeah, I was mad about Feud because Feud I thought was wonderful.
Yeah, I did too.
Oh, you know what else is a funny bit, and it could have gone really poorly, is when Colbert froze on stage and the security guys take him off and they go to that filmed Westworld thing.
Where he's sitting in the room naked.
Yeah, hilarious.
Did you hear the story about all of that? That he was actually naked when they filmed that? And they shot him from the back, so all you could see that he was clearly naked, but you could see his butt crack. Mm-hmm. That the CBS censors made them
they had to fuzz it out.
Fuzz it out because they didn't want to see butt crack on the Emmy Awards.
Yeah, that's a separate award show.
We have that on the morning news here all the time. Where Paul Conrad, for some reason, likes to show his butt. I don't understand why.
I am not surprised at all. Not surprised.
He's a butt shower from way back. One of the other things that we didn't mention was win for the comedy Veep. It won. This is the third year in a row now that it's won Best Comedy of the Year, and the sixth year in a row that Julia Louis-Dreyfus has won the award for Best Actress in a Comedy. That breaks the record, and is for an actress playing the same character winning the same award, same character, 6 years in a row.
I thought Kelsey Grammer had that record. Did he have the old one?
Apparently,
yeah.
Apparently, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah,
now
she's great. The show's great, but it's run its course. They're pulling the plug at the right time.
Yep.
Texter says the plunging necklines, wasn't it flattering in Gina Rodriguez? She looked beautiful.
Gina Rodriguez, I thought, was beautiful. Although there's a part of me because she's from the Wicker Park neighborhood. And I've known her from, when her career was, first starting. There's part of me, protective Uncle Dean, that I want to put my jacket on her.
Cover those up, honey.
Gina. Jeez.
Oh, protective Uncle Dean is on TV all morning with more Emmy highlights and more pictures and stuff like that. If you're so inclined, we'll be on TV at 9, as always, with CLTV. Thank you, buddy.
I want to put my jacket over you right now, Steve. Button it up a little, will you?
Yeah. Well, you got to show it all. Why would they, what's the old saying? Why would they buy the milk if they own the farm? Why would they buy the farm if they have milk? What is it?
What are you, you're Orion Samuelson all of a sudden.
There's some
Steve's Agriculture Hour.
There's some old saying you'd say to the farmer's daughter.
Why do you buy the cow if you can get the milk for free?
Oh, that's it. So it really has nothing to do with buying a farm. Oh, please. Hey, by the way, did you hear Steve Grzanich earlier with the investigative report he did about the making of people in Wisconsin?
No, they're actually making people there?
It's unbelievable. Grzanich broke this story. Listen.
And Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker plans to sign that $3 billion incentive package for Foxconn technology today. He'll be in Racine County. It looks like that's where that big plant is going to go, possibly creating thousands of people over the next 10 years.
And, Steve, what's the good part about that? You're only going to hear that clip like four times a day for the next 10 years or so.
No, Steve's not. Steve Cochran is not known, Dean, for ever taking a mistake.
I am going to so beat that into the ground. All right, I'll see you later.
Bye.
News next. Back. The big story. Andre is off this morning. Ryan's standing by next on 720 WGN.
Possibly creating thousands of people over the next 10 years.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
All right, 8:45 now. Steve, you live in the general area where you would take Wilson to work, right?
I take it to work every morning.
I take Lawrence a lot because that's the route to go see Abigail Grace and her parents, Ross and Lauren. And look, my brother was homeless. We're all in a position where we should be more than empathetic and sympathetic towards people who have fallen on hard times and gone through that. But there is an argument to be made for the fact that residents have a right to be able to drive to work, drive back, walk the sidewalks, walk back, without this tent city being where it is, which now, Steve, you say has moved a couple of blocks?
It has moved about a block and a half west of the Lakeshore Drive overpass, at least on Wilson Avenue, and it's lining the parkway on both sides of the street and And south, I guess that would be inner Lakeshore Drive.
So the concern would be somebody could wander out of a tent right into traffic.
The tents abut right up onto the curb. And that's the first thing I thought about this morning was the safety of people there. I mean, you could step out of one of these tents and walk right into traffic. A car could jump the curb just even by a half a foot and hit one of these tents. It doesn't appear to be safe. It doesn't look safe.
Yeah, and I think it's completely unfair for people to say, well, how could you? How could you even question this with what these folks are going through? Being homeless is awful, obviously. There are facilities and obviously not enough of them to take folks in. But there are also people who make the active choice not to use these facilities because they say they're unsafe or, in fact, maybe they are. So I don't know what the city can do about this, forced to do something about this at this point. The construction in these overpass, underpass situations, viaducts, needs to be done. But in the same vein, we have zoning restrictions that you can't build a house anywhere you want or put a business up for any reason anywhere you want. You've got to have some restrictions on where people can throw up what amounts to a cul-de-sac for homeless people.
Yeah, I posted a photograph, a screen grab this morning from Channel 9. They had video of these tents, right up on the curb there. And someone on social media responded to me that this is technically not Park District property. It's the parkway, apparently, between the sidewalk and the park. So that's why they put the tents there, even if it might be, a risk to safety. That's why they're so close to the curb, apparently.
Who's the alderman there, do we know?
In this area, it would be Kappelman. James Kappelman is my alderman.
And what's he saying?
Honestly, I haven't been following what he says very closely.
Well, I know that he's been saying anything, right? Because if you haven't heard it, I haven't heard it.
Yeah, I haven't heard him say anything. I know that there are a lot of homeless activists who've been saying a lot, but I have not seen him out on that at all.
Yeah, and God bless them all for getting out there and trying to find a better resource for these folks. But A, they have to want to move, and B, you have to give them what they need to help them get back to a more stable place in their lives. There's an organization out in the burbs, and there's a lot of great folks out there helping homeless people all the time. A lot of times it falls on the churches, but there's a group I've helped out with benefits over a few years called Hesed House out in Aurora, and they have a wonderful group, a wonderful organization that helps everyone from those who are dealing with addiction issues all the way up to families who have just fallen on hard times, who still get up and go to work in the morning, and their kids go to school, but they just don't have a home at this point. It's not a safe long-term situation. We got another winter coming in Chicago to have a tent city on Wilson or Lawrence. So there's no excuse for anybody being rude or disrespectful or jerks if you're walking through that area or driving through that area. But the residents have a right to complain about the sensibilities of doing it, right?
Yeah. And I have to say, mine is not a complaint at all. I mean,
no, I agree.
On a daily basis, when I come through there, I always think for what's happening there. And I donate to groups that help what's happening generally with homelessness. But today, when I saw it, I had extra concern because I thought, this is so close to the road. There's going to be an accident here. And I was just, more fearful than I was on any past day when I saw them in the underpass.
Samberg, considering, the lack of money in the city, in the state, see if you can find somebody who can give us a fair, maybe a reporter's point of view who's done a story on this, a summation of what resources are available in the city and what aren't. Because that's the closer way to get to the bottom of this on where it goes from here.
Yeah. A question I'd like to ask, there's a lot of foreclosed property in the city. Are there not enough foreclosed homes where perhaps homeless could be housed in some of those? I know some other cities in the country have turned their foreclosed homes into housing for the homeless. I mean, why can't that be an option here if it's not?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. A couple of weeks ago, I was downtown. I stayed downtown, and I was over near the Walgreens, and there was somebody outside who was homeless and was asking for money, and I talked to him for a bit and asked him, what his story was and what he was doing and what his plans were, and, helped him out a little bit. And he was a very nice man, a little confused, but very nice man, and I offered to, help him find a place. And he said, no, he doesn't feel safe in any of those shelters. I find it hard to believe that every shelter in the city is bad, but when the network of conversations that go on amongst homeless folks is don't go there, you're going to get hurt, that helps build this up. So I guess that's why I need a better explanation on what we have in a city and what we don't have and how it's funded and all of those things. It's got to be somebody at the Tribune that's done this story.
Yeah. You know, the part of the story we've also been reporting on is why they don't want to go to some of these shelters. They have to get their stuff out in the morning and move out and come back in the evening. And I could see if I were homeless, I'd want to keep my stuff with me. What little stuff I had, I'd want to keep it with me.
Sure.
So I could see how that would be a roadblock to going to a shelter.
Well, that's why you look at what our friend Mark Doyle does with, you know, Rags of Honor, where you're taking veterans and you're trying to get them back on their feet. We all can do more. We all should do more. But in the meantime, there's got to be a solution to just having these folks. By the way, where are the tents coming from? Tents must be provided by people, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing people have donated tents. Some of these tents are...
They look pretty elaborate.
Pretty nice tents, yeah.
Yeah, but again, do you want to be living in a tent on Wilson or Lawrence in December or January in this town?
Or even in the heat.
Yeah.
Or yeah, that's true. It's going to be really mid to high 80s rest of the week.
And on the hot sidewalk?
You know, people always say, you know, we're the greatest country on earth. If that's the case, how do we allow this? How do we allow people to be homeless?
It shouldn't exist.
You know,
shouldn't exist, yeah. All right. So I wish we had more solutions for you, but we are going to look more into it, into it more deeply. The other, Dave, I don't know if you know this, major local story that's going on.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln's moving.
I heard that. I was stunned.
Yes. Abraham Lincoln is moving, and we will get to the bottom of this. I was going to go out and interview him, but he's quiet. He didn't have a lot to say.
Well, it's the guy next to him.
Yeah, he's busy talking.
The Coles guy.
Yeah. Well, apparently... So he's holding a copy of the Gettysburg Address. I didn't know that. Steve mentioned that in the news earlier.
I didn't know that until today either.
Yes, yes. He's. I've been told by the city that he represents, quote, every man.
Every man.
I got to tell you, I don't have that sweater.
No, no. Look, I mean, it's sharp.
Yes, you can get it at Kohl's. It looks good on him.
I thought he was Steve Carell.
I thought it was
You thought Steve Carell was every man?
Yeah.
Oh. And I thought that was last week's People. I didn't think it was the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge copy of it.
It is.
Giant.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll tell you where Lincoln's moving.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
Ah, the magic of POTUS. Trump just had a meeting at the UN to reorganize and restructure the UN. It took less than 10 minutes. Takes them longer than that to eat 12 chalupas from Taco Bell. I don't even understand that. Well, now he's going to go and he's going to speak to the UN General Assembly with everybody there. If you're watching CLTV, I am sporting a, what color would you call this hat?
I would call that a royal blue.
Royal blue? Is that royal blue?
I think it's royal blue, isn't it?
It's from Kenny Perry's Country Club. You know Kenny Perry?
Sure.
Kenny Perry, longtime PGA Tour pro and a big winner on the Senior Tour the last few years, owns a country club in Kentucky terms in a town called Franklin, Kentucky.
That's near Nashville, isn't it?
That's not too far.
In fact, that's where Spike lives now. He just moved there.
He moved to Franklin?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. On the property on a couple of hillsides, nice golf course, a little pro shop. I bought the hat. And I found the hat this morning, and I was, as Mel Brooks would say, thrilled and delighted. I haven't seen it in years. So I decided to wear the hat today, and it occurred to me on CLTV, remember when we did the Steve Cochran Show pen drive? We ran out of pens?
Oh, sure.
And I said, well, send me your pen, and I'll plug your business. And we got thousands of pens. Send me your hat. Send me your company hat, and I'll wear it on TV. Now, we won't do it every day, but I'll pick a hat, and you'll watch CLTV, and I'll plug your business. I'll wear your business, your company's hat on TV.
Are you looking for OSFA, or are you looking for?
I'm looking for NSFW. What is OSFA?
One size fits all.
Oh, one size fits all. Well, that's a fair point. They need to fit my melon.
Okay, so that what size?
7 7/8. So if you go adjustable, like this is adjustable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those would work, the adjustable.
Yeah, but some of the adjustables are smaller than others.
Oh.
But send me your business hat anyway. Send me a hat for your business and I'll wear it. The address is 435 North Michigan Avenue, Chicago 60611. It's Steve Cochran Show. The Steve Cochran Show hat drive. It's
and then what are you going to do with the hats afterwards?
Sandberg will take a big picture of them, put them on social media.
okay, but then once you've worn them, are you going to keep them? Are you going to donate them?
Yeah, probably.
You know,
donate.
It's like after a hat trick at the United Center.
I hadn't thought
Center.
About it that far. Yes, I'll take them all to the United Center and wait for the first hat trick, and I'll throw them all out at once. Yeah, send me your hat. Send me your business hat. What do I call this? The hat drive? Hats 2017? Hats enough?
Hey, yeah, we got to come up with a name for it.
Okay. Well, you get the plan. Our friend Cletus Friedman's here. Cletus has been on the show before. Cletus is one of the best-known names in Chicago chefery, and he apparently doesn't have enough to do in his 18-hour days. Because now he is taking on a brand new project. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you back.
Sorry I didn't bring you a hat today.
That's fine. It's totally understandable. But as a fellow member of the Bald Guy Club, yep. I would assume you've got a few in your closet as well. A
couple two-tree hats
yeah,
in my closet.
Yeah, a couple of those, yeah. Right. All right, explain to people where you cook.
So Theater on the Lake at 2401 North Lakeshore Drive, built in 1920 as an open-air sanitarium.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
That's right.
So the folks could just wander out on the beach?
They would just push the kids into this room thinking that the fresh air, that's where the Chicago Daily News Fresh Air Fund started.
Okay.
They would put the kids out there and think that, you know, exposing them to the lake and the air would cure them, and it really
did. Of tuberculosis and whatever else they were dealing with.
Exactly. Okay. So in the late 30s, it closed down, then the Park District took it over, called it Theater on the Lake,
yep.
Started doing performances there. And that went in and out of time, and then it sat dormant for a little over a decade. So we came in last year, started rebuilding it, and it will be a theater, a restaurant, and an event space, too. And so if you want to get married, you want to have weddings, corporate events, you can take the whole space.
How would you describe the motif?
The building is prairie style with a little French influence. We tried to keep a lot of that original architecture and bring it into the current state with some really nice finishes. The menu in the restaurant, I say, is going to be seasonal Midwestern with a little French influence.
Okay.
We have our campus is from Fullerton all the way up to Diversey Harbor.
Oh, you're kidding.
So we have about 4.5 acres of lakefront property.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good. So your designated opening is when?
In a few weeks.
Right. No lockdown day right now.
Well, you know, if I told you, you come into the restaurant, I tell you it's an hour wait. If we go an hour and a half, you're going to be a little upset. So
right.
We're going to say a few weeks.
A few weeks, right.
We're real close.
So contractors will determine that.
Exactly.
Yes. And for people that want to know what's going on, you got a couple of events coming up.
We do. We have the Danny Did Foundation is doing their Hearts and Hugs event to benefit epilepsy and sudden unexpected death in epilepsy. That's going to be a big gala on September 30th. You can get tickets online. The next day we have Bloody Mary Fest.
I'm guessing that's in the morning?
It'll be in the morning, afternoon, exactly.
Right.
I mean, you can really have Bloody Marys anytime.
Dave, you like yours in the morning, don't you?
Well, not on weekdays, not when I'm here.
You don't knock two or three down on your way in the morning?
No, I really don't.
Well, then I'll just pack up the Bloody Mary bar I brought with me and go.
Well, I wouldn't go move that quickly.
All right, well, I mean, okay, I'll keep it.
What is the key to a great Bloody Mary before we tell you when Bloody Mary Fest is, where and when?
I feel it is the spice level. And that's why I use fresh horseradish in mine, because some people will give you a little too much spice. It'll scare people away. You can always make it spicier, but making it approachable yet having a little kick, that's my secret.
You agree with that?
Yeah, I like – do you ever use Old Bay spice?
I'm from Baltimore, so
okay,
Old Bay
I'm from
on
that there. Neck of the woods, too.
That's, oh, good.
You can put that in anything.
I put Old Bay on my toothpaste.
Yeah, there you go.
The Bloody Mary Fest will take place on October 1st.
On October 1st.
Starting when?
Starts at VIP starts at 10, and then general admission starts at 11.
How many Bloody Marys will be featured?
I believe there'll be 10 different Bloody Marys. It's a competition. You come, you taste, you judge. There's food. The VIP hour is sponsored by yours truly, crafted by Cletus.
Well, Dave should be one of your judges.
You should. Come
on
in.
You should be one of the celebrity
judges. I'm sure you can nudge your way
in there. What's game time on October 1st?
It was October 1st. Is what day of the
week? Isn't that a Saturday?
Would it be a Sunday?
It's a Sunday.
Oh, it's a Sunday.
It's a Sunday.
Oh, well, that's perfect.
I'll be around.
Yeah, he should be.
We could pregame. We could just turn it into a big tailgate party.
No, let me tell you something. He is the hooch master of the Steve
Cochran
Show.
No, that's not true.
So he should definitely be one of your celebrities.
It's not something you should deny. You should take total ownership of it
and
spread the hooch.
Great pride in it.
Put it that way.
Yeah.
Yes, I would definitely make him one of your celebrity
when
judges.
You're a hooch master, you got to own up to
from
it.
One hooch master to another.
To another.
Exactly. Oh, okay, in that case.
Cletus Friedman's here. Will the restaurant be open around the same time as these events?
Right.
Or do you not have to have it be open for these events?
It'll be ready to open. We're going to do our soft opening just after the events, get them under our belt, get everything ready, and then push forward.
All right.
So there'll be the theater aspect with music and all that stuff. Everything will be ready.
So the theater space is eventually going to seat how many?
Anywhere from 180 to 300. We'll have a mix of music and performances. Joe Shanahan from the Metro is taking care of our music, so we'll have some real decent music.
And I would guess you're probably going to have pop-ins, right? Because what a cool place for people to come by and just jam or play.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what we're planning and hoping for. I have this smile on my face because it's music and food and
the pictures McCartney swinging by next summer after his Wrigley concert with Billy Joel.
But after Lollapalooza, a lot of
after
these
shows
acts go out and perform.
Exactly. And what better place to do it than on the lakefront?
Right.
I remember when after parties for me used to be 4 a.m. You know what they are now? 4 p.m.
Yes.
I was going to say after parties are usually 7 to be in bed by 10.
You stay awake till 4 p.m.?
Oh, yeah. Well, it depends on the day. More with Cletus in a second, 921, back with that after this on 720 WGN. Cletus Friedman's here, reopening theater on the lake. Is there a reason that nobody had done this in the last few years?
Every single person that we talked to is saying, oh, it's about time someone did something with this. I don't know why. I know that an RFP went out, you know, a long time ago, and it took a little while to get there, but...
I mean, the city's got to be all for it.
Everybody's so excited. The city's very much for it.
Right.
In fact, Mayor Emanuel came out to do the ribbon cutting last week, and everybody that walks in is just floored and wowed by how it looks and how it's going to function, and people stop just walking by. We have people in the neighborhood that come by on a weekly basis to check in and see where
they
the
can't
progress
wait.
Is. Yeah.
So you have chefed in a lot of places,
mm-hmm.
and you're one of the best guys in the city.
Oh,
why take
you.
This challenge on?
So I got the call about this project, and it really takes everything that I love doing and puts it under a roof. I love music. I love restaurants. I love events, and I have all that in my history. So the ability to run a restaurant, to flex that muscle, and still be able to do weddings and events and things like that.
And theater.
And where it is, I go to work every single day, and I have a big smile on my face.
And you're pumped up.
I'm a little pumped up, yeah.
So your idea that you took to investors, or investors came to you and hired you?
They came to me and hired me and said, you know, they wanted to put an upscale tavern on the lake. And based on what I had done, thought that I was the right guy. And I'm tending to agree with them.
All right, so let's get the plugs in again. Bloody Mary Fest on October 1st. That's a Sunday morning into a Sunday afternoon into who knows how long.
Chicagosocial.com. You can go there and get your tickets.
And on the day before, you do what?
The Danny Did Foundation. You can get your tickets at Danny Did. Let me see. What is that? DannyDid.com.
DannyDid.org.
.org. .org, yeah.
Yeah. Spell that out for folks.
DannyDid.org.
Right. Right. And it's a great cause as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Nice to see you.
A lot of great things going on. So.
All right. So for the grand opening, we'll come over.
For the grand opening, you'll come over. We'll kibitz. We'll have a little hooch.
Yeah, I just I was telling Cletus.
That's how Cletus looked at me when he said that.
Yeah, he said hooch, and he automatically turned to you. I told Cletus, I said, "Thanks for making me a member." He said, "We don't have memberships." I said, "Well, you know, you do for me."
Right. Of course we do. For you, you have a membership.
Created a whole new category.
We'll make you a hat.
There you go.
Cletus Friedman, nice to see you, buddy.
Nice to
congratulations
see you. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Coming guys. Back Theater on the Lake, 928. More in a moment. 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's 941. Steve Cochran Show continues. He was just in studio with us, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. Will Geiger is back. Nice to see you, sir.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you came back. You told a pretty incredible story. You were about to take on a triathlon with an amazing athlete who's completely blind.
Correct.
What's that gentleman's name?
David Kuhn.
And the event was when?
A week and a half ago.
In taking this on, and it was right after you were in here that you guys were going to do this, and taking this on, you're a guy that knows what he's doing, obviously, because you're out there doing triathlons. How many have you done?
I've done 5 Ironman.
Right. And you're about to, you're considering, I should say, doing another one soon.
Correct.
Sooner than later.
Yes.
In the midst of all the other training and stuff you've done. And this guy just, he struck a chord with you.
Yeah.
So there's an amazing piece of the story. You guys did not finish because he got into trouble at which leg of the event?
In the water during the very first leg of the event.
Okay, he's blind. How could he not be in trouble?
Exactly. I admire his courage to get in the water.
But he keeps trying, right?
Yes, he does.
How many is this?
This was his 5th attempt. His 4th attempt at Ironman Wisconsin, his 5th attempt at Ironman.
And it just doesn't seem like he's going to quit.
No, he wants to go back next year. I asked if I would guide him again next year.
Now, the struggle that he had in that case, turn that microphone right in front of your mouth if you don't mind. The struggle that he had in particular in the water was what? Just the ability to swim, you know, with all that going on?
It was more mental. He had done the swim before, so okay. It was nothing new to him.
Okay.
It was just a challenging day from the start. He didn't sleep well, had a lot of self-doubt. We got in the water and struggled for a little over an hour before...
Just decided it was
time to be done.
How disappointed was he?
He was very disappointed.
So this mental hurdle, I would assume, whether you're fully sighted and fully equipped, the mental piece of doing an Ironman's got to be huge.
Yeah, I would say the mental component is more important than the physical component, even as somebody who can see fine.
Right, because your body's screaming quit.
Correct.
Yeah, and you have to now listen to it. So how does he get over that hurdle? Is that something he'll continue to work on?
I think so.
Sports psychology? What do you do?
It's a great question. I think there is some sports psychology there. You know, I can't fathom what he was going through as a 65-year-old blind athlete in the water.
Right, and you're a fully sighted young guy.
Right, and he's, you know, tethered to me and dependent on somebody else's sight and, you know, swimming with 2,600 athletes. It's, you know, I can't fathom what he was experiencing. I could only try to assess his safety and well-being and make sure we could continue going forward.
By the way, I don't have his name in front of me.
David Kuhn?
David Kuhn. I know you said it and I didn't write it down. An amazing guy.
I just hope
he feels good about the fact that he keeps trying.
He's really inspirational. I mean, he's got a couple marathons lined up still yet this year, and he's already wanting to go back to give Ironman Wisconsin a go again next year.
What does this do to your training schedule?
That's a good question. So I'm still considering doing an Ironman later this year. Ironman Louisville is the weekend after Chicago Marathon. It's the middle of October. So I'm thinking about just kind of carrying my training forward and signing up for one later this year.
You know, when you think about an Ironman, which again, give them the specs on an Ironman, what do you have to do again?
It's a 2.4-mile swim.
Okay.
A 112-mile bike, and then a marathon.
It's fast as you can do those three legs back to back to back.
Yes.
Yes.
So you were saying you did like 9 hours or something?
A little over 9 hours. 9:23, yeah. Yes.
When you take on a marathon, just a marathon, does that seem like a big deal to you anymore?
Oh, sure. It requires a ton of training. I almost think that training for a marathon is harder than training for an Ironman. I mean, maybe it doesn't require quite as much time, but the physical toll, just because of all the pounding, I feel like is harder with all the running relative to kind of the multi-discipline components of a triathlon.
In some ways, I suppose, because you can split up the training, right,
for
the Ironman, so you don't have to super focus on just the run.
Correct, and a lot lower impact with swimming and cycling.
It's just a different level of athlete. I don't know how to wrap your head around what you do. I mean, Dave, you're in great shape. Have you ever considered taking on an Ironman?
No. Nor would I. And partly, we talked about it last, I haven't done a triathlon, partly because I feel uneasy getting into the water. I can swim, but I think that would be I don't think I would be comfortable in that situation. So to be somebody who's blind trying to do it and relying on you, and no matter how much confidence I know he has in you, I can't even imagine what that would feel like.
Right, and he didn't learn to swim until he was 60 years old.
Oh, is that right?
It's just incredible.
It really is.
I mean, you know, honestly, and we should probably get him on. I know he's been reluctant to come on before, but if we had David Kuhn on, I'd sit here and tell him the same thing. And I'm sure everybody in his life's telling him the same thing. But I guess part of the fact that he feels bad will spur him on for the challenge to continue, right?
Absolutely.
Because he didn't get over that mountain.
Right.
It's just, it's a different level of thinking.
He's very motivated.
So, but you, as an accomplished athlete at your level, Do you feel like in some ways you should have done something differently, or are you comfortable?
Because
you should be comfortable.
Right. No, I was comfortable out there. I asked him after we got out of the water if there was something I could have done differently. But he said it was really all in his head. And, you know, I asked if there was something I could have said or done. And he said there was not, which is why he's also asked me to come back and give it another go with him next year. But it is challenging as an athlete to be pulled out of the water. And
Right, because you're not about quitting.
No.
Right.
But he had been in the water with you.
Yes,
right?
He had. Yeah.
So it wasn't just being in the water. It was being in the water in that moment.
In
that entire situation where it's all these other swimmers and knowing that you have the two other legs still to come.
Correct. It was. There were many waves that passed us after we got in the water. We got in the water at 6:40, and they did a rolling start up in Madison. So every 5 minutes thereafter, there were about 400 or 500 athletes that would start swimming, and us being slower swimmers would become engulfed pretty much.
I have, for all the years we've done this and for all the high-level athletes we've talked to, there's a similarity from sport to sport that I think applies here, and that is, whatever it takes to throw a football, whatever it takes to hit a golf ball, whatever it takes to hit a baseball, whatever it takes to run, swim, bike, there's something you have to find within you that's your thing that makes that particular skill work. You may have the gift, but there's still something mentally that has to click with you. So there's no, you know, I think about, well, what could you say to new marathoners this year to help them get over that hump? But it always feels, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it always feels to me like it's your thing.
It is.
You've got to find that individual thing that gets you there.
And something's going to resonate with one person in a different way than it will with someone else.
Yeah. You see this in golf all the time. There's a million golf tips, but a golf tip doesn't necessarily work for you that'll work for the next guy.
Right. And it also says it doesn't matter how much training you put in. If you know, you're not there on the day, then it might not all come together.
Can you do it for somebody else? I don't mean your piece of this. I'm saying, can you go in and say, I'm going to do my first marathon, and I'm going to run it for my kids, or I'm going to run it for my wife or my husband or somebody that's no longer here? Do you have to really take that on mentally as I'm doing this for me?
I think doing it for someone else adds kind of a component to it that will help you overcome the mental adversity during the race. I've always fundraised for every race that I've done, and I feel like when you've reached those times of mental adversity, you think about the people that you're doing it for and the support system that you have, and I think that that's a mental driver.
So that's a goal that you want to achieve, mm-hmm. and maybe not the fear of letting people down, but making sure you get there. You said right. you made a promise in some level.
Right.
So. I'm sure that helps, but are there tricks to deal with the fatigue and the muscle pain that you're going through, not necessarily just thinking about what your goal is, but thinking about how you can fight through that pain?
Yeah, I mean, in addition to just making sure that your nutrition is properly prepared, I think it's, you know, the pain is, as cliche as it is temporary. I mean, it's going to be over when you're done with the race. So, but it is tough mentally to kind of get through some of those mental hurdles.
Was there any other time you had to quit one?
No.
Any kind of race? No, never. Wow.
I just want to share with people just a section of what you wrote for us about what you guys went through in the water so they can try to visualize this. You talk about the admiration you have for his courage, which we've discussed here. He said, we got in the water, started with these pro athletes in a small wave, but he had some struggles getting going. In 5-minute increments, the other waves of athletes were going off. So people can visualize that he's having that mental hurdle he's struggling with. And now you're on the Eisenhower and there's 47 cars surrounding you,
correct.
Right?
Yes.
And I assume they're bumping into you.
Oh,
they're
yes.
coming close. I mean, you can get everybody that's ever done a triathlon of any length that's told me the swim's really tough because you don't see people coming. You're getting kicked in the head. People are swimming over you, under you. That all happens.
It
right?
was very physical. Yes.
So he's in the middle of that. I would assume that made the mental crush that he was going through exponentially worse.
It absolutely did.
Said we had an entire fleet of kayaks, paddleboards, and boats reinforcing their support as long as we can continue to move forward. You try to create small goals for him?
Yes, we did. I said, you know, let's make it to the next buoy. And he'd ask how far the next buoy is. And I'd say, you know, it's 100 meters. And we'd start moving forward, and then he'd stop and kind of say, no, I can't swim that length right now. I said, well, let's just take 20 strokes and then let's reassess how we're feeling. And We did have plenty of support. The volunteers out in the water were incredible, and we had people in kayaks saying, hey, David, we're right here with you guys, and we're willing to kind of escort you as far as you want to go.
Okay, you just want the guy to make it.
Yeah, you do.
Because it means so much to him, right?
Yes, it does.
And good for you for doing it. I hope you guys get to do it again.
I hope so, too.
And let us know what you're doing, because you're an amazing guy, and we'd love to keep in touch with you.
Well, thanks very much, and thanks for having me back.
I appreciate you filling in the blanks on the story, too. Will Geiger. If people, want to find out more, maybe, we got other athletes listening on how they can help athletes who are not sighted or things like that, is there a place you send them?
There's a great organization called Dare to Try.
Okay.
That pairs up abled athletes with disabled athletes of all different kinds. They're paraplegics, blind athletes, and it's a great organization that tries to help provide resources for athletes that are disabled. Dare to Try.
Dare to Try. Just Google that up. Nice to see you, Will.
Good to see you guys,
All the best.
Thank you.
Bill and Wendy coming up, and something you should never do while lifting weights in the gym before 10 on 720 WGN and CLTV. Before we get back to business here, Dave, I just wanted to alert people in the gym of a potential problem that you need to avoid.
Okay, so is this something I should take notes on for the gym downstairs when I go in there later?
Possibly, though I don't think this particular incident has affected you.
Okay, good.
Firefighters in a town called Worms, probably called Worms, what? W-O-R-M-S, Worms, Germany.
Okay.
Were called in to help free a man over the weekend. He got a particular body part stuck in the hole of a dumbbell. They eventually, because of this body part being stuck in the hole of the dumbbell, had to break the dumbbell apart with a grinder and a hydraulic saw.
Okay.
It was on Friday.
Okay.
Photos, not of the man's body part, but of the broken dumbbell, are out there and available if you so choose to take a look. But you're probably wondering, as I was, Dave, how big a dumbbell? I don't have the exact weight here. I guess I would say, why would that matter? Because that's not a place for you to put that. And if you say the words grinder and electric saw around that part of your body, I'm pretty sure that part of your body is never going to work again.
This was a workout accident?
Yeah, what was he wearing, a Speedo?
I don't know if it was an accident so much. This sounds fairly intentional to me. This sounds like maybe a quiet moment in the corner of the gym to me. It's just not a good idea.
Oh, gotcha.
Let's go now live to Bill at the gym. Bill,
yes, Steve.
Have you seen anything like this before?
Never in all my days.
No, and you wouldn't want to, would you?
No. Where was this, in Germany?
It was in Germany.
Oh, I bet it's commonplace in Germany.
You think it's a German thing?
Yeah, it happens all the time in Germany.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
Sure.
Can I say, when I was in Europe once, there was a guy on a rower it was in Germany or France, and he was wearing a Speedo on the rower. In the gym.
And no one used that rower ever again.
My sister, it was my daughter at the time. She was 16, and we're like, okay.
That's not good.
PYS, Steve, protect your schnitzel. You know this.
Yes. Yes, you should always protect your schnitzel. We'll come back, Schnitzel and Wendy, in just a second on 720 WGN.